AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Grain and livestock futures are on the defensive to start the holiday shortened business week. Silage harvest is in high gear, and so is seed corn harvest. And we've got big reports coming up for the grain markets at the end of the week. But these reports come with a twist. We'll get rid of any confusion about that twist.
Live from Tuesday morning via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Lance Honig from USDA NASS. Then it's the CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, Jeff Cooper. Right after the news, Karen Bonerch from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
What did you say it is?
Tuesday.
Oh, because it's a Tuesday, but it feels like a Monday. Is that what we're getting at?
For those of us desk jockeys, yes.
Yes.
This is sort of like it's the first work day of the work week.
Right.
I mean, it basically just means we have to do Monday's work and Tuesday's work today. So it's
well,
Tuesday.
Actually, for you and me, we did a whole lot of Monday's work last week on Thursday and Friday, along with Big Apple Joe, to make sure that there wasn't a couple hours of dead air on a whole bunch of radio stations out there on Monday.
See, you're lifting the veil. We were just going to let them think all that was like happening live. Like,
hang on.
Put the stakes on hold. I got to go do the show. Just wait a second. I'll be back in an hour, everybody.
They know us better than that. They do. But I tell you, for a lot of the guys that are chopping silage, a lot of guys that are harvesting seed corn, it was difficult to lay claim to Labor Day. And,
for them, it might just be Tuesday. It might just be Tuesday for those folks.
They don't even know or care what day it is, the way that some of these guys have been getting after it, Davis. Silage chopping 24 hours a day, just trying, because it seems to be getting past the optimum point very quickly. So guys are out there doing what they can to get it as quality of feed as they can possibly get. So a lot of effort out there. We're watching you. We're listening to you. We see what you're doing out there.
Yep.
So it's good stuff. And then the seed corn. Good grief, man. I can't believe how fast that is coming around. Caleb Hamer was on the Farmer Forum with us on Wednesday, and he said, yeah, it's coming. And then Mark Recker on the free-for-all on Friday said, it's getting really close. Yeah, I think it's more than really close for Mark now. I got a feeling that they are off and running. Okay, man, speaking of off and running, let's get started with the news. What you got?
Sure thing. Well, in August, Chip, the Labor Department reported only 235,000 net new jobs, well below the consensus forecast by economists of 733,000. There are still 5 million fewer jobs compared to before the pandemic, but resignations are the highest on record, up 13% over pre-pandemic levels. There are 4.9 million more people who are not working or even looking for work than there were before the pandemic. The decline in real wages in the last year is one of the reasons, analysts note, as wages after inflation have fallen for 7 straight months, which is a disincentive to take a job.
Yeah. Yeah. If you didn't get a chance to hear Dr. Vince Malanga, economist, president of LaSalle Economics on yesterday afternoon show, give that a listen, because we talk a lot about what's going on in the jobs market.
Well, the numbers are coming in. Hurricane Ida knocked out at least 10% of U.S. grain export capacity. Export facilities at the Gulf are still without power. The rail lines are said to be running, and the container port facilities are open for operation. The market is optimistic some power may be restored this week, but grain destined for the Gulf faces a reduced basis until facilities fully reopen. The Pacific Northwest is operational. Mobile is operational, as well as are the Houston facilities.
Yeah, move that grain around, get it out of here.
Democrats are meeting this week to begin drafting their plan for a transformation of the American social safety net, with markups expected to wrap up by the non-binding September 15 deadline written into the resolution. Republicans charge the Democratic plans are nothing short of socialism and are concerned that the plan is financially unsustainable and would undermine economic growth by rendering Americans too dependent on the government for their basic needs.
Dude, I wish they would settle on a name. I wish they would settle on it because it was human infrastructure. It was social infrastructure. It was Build Back Better. Now it's what? American Social Safety Net.
That's right.
And I know I'm missing some of the names that they had that they have assigned to this thing. But it's cradle to grave is what they're talking about in this thing. Cradle to grave support. And I don't know how we can afford that.
Well, and I don't know if cradle to grave will catch on. The cradle part people like, it's the grave that scares them. That's what scares them.
That's right.
On Sunday, September 5, House Ag Committee Republican leader Glenn G.T. Thompson and Republican committee leadership urged Chairman David Scott to uphold his pledge and to, quote, return to the committee's storied history of bipartisanship ahead of this week's reconciliation process. The letter also noted, quote, it seems as though the days we come together for the common good of rural America are now few and far between.
Dude, okay, keep this in mind. The amount of money that may come from this social infrastructure bill, the Build Back Better, for the Ag Committee to implement, to use, to disperse of, would be bigger than a farm bill. Bigger than a farm bill. Title I and the conservation title combined. If it's that big, there should be some bipartisan conversation about how it's going to be handled.
Well, and quickly here, President Biden's approval rating hovered in the low to mid 50s since taking office in late January. Currently, most pollsters put Biden's approval rating around 45%. Gary Langer, longtime director of polling at ABC News, said that since they began keeping records around the Truman administration, only two presidents have had lower approval rating. Donald Trump, 37%, August 2017. Gerald Ford, also 37% in March of 75. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Boner. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How are you this morning, Karen?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, Chip?
Okay. A lot better than some of those guys that are dealing with the remnants of Hurricane Ida up in the Northeast. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, last week the Hurricane Ida devastated New Jersey's largest dairy farm, Wellacrest Farms, which is home to 1,400 Holstein cows. As you can imagine, the family is still trying to process what unfolded and the damage that left behind. One of the owners told me, you see this out west, you never think it's going to be in your backyard, certainly in New Jersey. Silos, grain bins, freestyle barns, they've all been damaged. The family is thankfully still milking via generator. They still don't have power. And thankfully, no people were hurt. And the last I was aware of, Chip, three cows were killed, but that number is likely to increase as they believe as many as 300 cows were trapped underneath the debris, and the family is still finding many more severely injured cattle. They're making makeshift pens to put the cows in because barns, again, have been damaged, flattened. And when I was talking to the owners about 72 hours after the storm hit, they were running through cornfields still locating cows. And to add to it, they were planning on chopping the day after the storm hit. So their chopper was buried underneath the rubble. And thankfully, they had a dealership was working on it. If they couldn't get it started, they'll bring them a replacement. So, yeah, they still had to chop their feed. They were still having to make a decision where we're going to put feed up for the whole next year. But the family tells me they plan to rebuild. The cost is unknown. The time frame will be long, but they're steadfast with commitment, just putting one foot in front of the other, focusing today on making sure that their cows are still cared for. In the meantime, people can go to Dairy Herd for the full story. There's a GoFundMe link. Man, they're in tough shape, and prayers are being sent out east.
Absolutely. You got that right. Thank you so much, Karen. Appreciate that update. That's Karen Boner, Farm Journal's Milk. We've got Lance Honig up next. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin. The concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD-TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD-TV.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD-TV.
Davis. Jim Wiesmeyer and I were having a conversation this morning about Hurricane Ida.
Oh, you were? Would that be part of the Signal to Noise podcast you all two are up to?
Absolutely.
That's very informative and a worthwhile listen, just
it
generally
is.
Speaking.
I like to think that it is.
All right.
Well, you look at all the damage that this storm caused and how it seems to be getting maybe not as much attention as what I thought maybe it would be getting from mainstream media. Now, thank God that the seawalls held in New Orleans and the floodgates and all of that. Thank God for that. But because they did, it's almost like mainstream media decided, okay, well, that's not a story. And in the meantime, it took until the storm system got all the way to the northeast and caused the devastating loss of life and flooding in the northeast before they really started to focus again on the damage that was there. And then five tornadoes in New Jersey in one day. My gosh, what Karen was talking about. It's really devastating. But go back down to the Gulf with the damage done to the export facilities. It's something that we're going to be dealing with for a while. Now, it's great to hear that they're getting closer to getting power restarted. But still, it just feels like there's a ways to go. And it also feels like that damage was much more severe to infrastructure than what was initially reported. I mean, the slowdown in oil production out of the Gulf is way worse than what it was with Katrina. Way worse.
Yes, and the general lack of attention to that, I would say, is maybe just a sign of how little the public really knows about agriculture and what's important to agriculture.
Right. Yeah.
On the export side, you know.
That may be exactly right. Okay, let's bring in Lance Honig. Lance is the chief of the crops branch at USDA's National Ag Statistics Service. Lance, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, doing well, Chip. It seems like a good week for a report.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way because you got a big one coming out on Friday. And there's a little bit of a twist to this, and it was made public in a notice that came our way September 1? Yeah, on September 1. And, well, tell us about it. Tell us about this twist in the acreage number.
Well, as you know, we typically update our planted acreage estimates for corn and soybeans, as well as several other crops in the October report. But the little twist we've got is that we're going to go ahead and take a look at corn, soybeans, sorghum, and sugar beets this month, month earlier than we typically do. You know, the new information that comes into play this time of year, or typically in October, is really that certified acreage information from FSA. Right. And we've talked a lot about why October is the time frame. It has to do with reporting timelines, you know, how long it takes data to get compiled, things of that nature. But looking closely at the data as we do, we determined that information is sufficiently complete this year to do it a month early. And so, as you know, we like to get information out as quickly as possible. We want it to be as accurate as possible, as soon as possible. And so we're taking this opportunity to go ahead and do that review a month earlier than we typically have.
Okay. Tell me, is it because there is a higher percentage of acres already certified, or is it because your analysis of the certified acreage data, you've just gained that much more confidence in it?
Well, it really has to do with the completeness of the data.
Okay.
You know, we've been looking at this data for years and years, and so, you know, we're totally comfortable with the data itself, but what it comes down to is it takes time for that data to get reported. Yeah. It takes time for it to work its way through the systems over at FSA. They've done a phenomenal job in recent years of speeding that process up. But there's still factors that are outside their control in any given year. And so it's not always going to be this early, but this year it is. So we want to make sure that we're as responsive as possible. You know, acres has a big impact on production. And so the sooner we can get acreage tweaked, if it needs to be, the better we can make those production numbers.
Right. Now, when the notice came out, I immediately assumed that, okay, it's the certified acreage data. And then, of course, that seems to be what it is, but In the notice, there is a mention of the satellite-based data. Do you also feel like maybe you're gaining more confidence in the satellite data?
Well, you know, the satellite data, where we gain confidence there lately has probably been more on the yield side, simply because acreage has been pretty solid with the satellites for a number of years. We certainly throw that into the mix along with all the survey data that we've got. But the new piece this time of year really becomes that certified acreage information. And we've talked about it before. You know, with such a high percentage of acreage being certified at FSA, once you get a complete or, you know, relatively complete picture of that data, you know, that's really the best source of information you're going to have.
Yep. Lance, you've told me for years that you get a look at the certified acreage data on a regular basis, and as soon it's always been a case of you will use that information as soon as you think that it is reliable. Well, in the past, that reliability factor really never came in until October, but here this year it's there. It's not like in the past you weren't looking at it. It's just the reliability of it is there for this year.
Yeah, it just, like I say, it just has to be complete enough. You know, you could even look back a month earlier, and if folks looked at the data that was published from FSA, you saw a few instances where that data was already higher than some of our individual state estimates. But if we start making adjustments then, we don't know where to make the adjustments the other direction if they need to be made. And so if we jump in too early, we could actually be moving a U.S. total the wrong direction. So that's not beneficial to anybody. We've got to focus on the U.S. first, and so that's what we're doing.
Do you feel like this might be a permanent change where you start looking at FSA certified acreage in September?
Well, you know, we've talked about that for a number of years, and at this point we're only committing to this year, but that's something we've been looking at. It's something we're going to continue to look at. You know, as I mentioned earlier on, sometimes there's some things outside of anybody's control that in any given year can cause that still to be a bit slower process. And so we've got to be a little bit careful that we don't, you know, put ourselves in a situation in the future that leaves us in a bad spot. So we're going to carefully look at that, and we'll see. But we haven't committed to that at this point. I would point out, as it was mentioned in the notice, we're going to look at these same acres for corn and soybeans again next month as well. So we're going to be as careful as we can.
Excellent. More in the about the production report. You've got the enumerators into the objective yield plots for September. This is the first time of the year, right?
Yeah, that's right. For corn, soybeans, and cotton, all three of those crops. Objective. In fact, the field work's done. So we're just in the process of getting that all worked through, you know, our systems here and through the lab where the data was complete enough to move there. But that's always exciting when we can get that piece of the puzzle added to the mix. Last month, obviously, we were just relying on what the farmers told us, as well as some satellite information. But, you know, not only getting that additional information, but as the crop matures, that data becomes more accurate. That's just how it works. And so we're really looking forward to seeing what the data tells us this month.
Excellent. Okay, how many plots out there for September? And does the plot number change?
It's fairly consistent. It can change some year by year. We're just a little over 1,000 each for corn and soybeans. I think about 1,015 for corn, 1,050 for soybeans. There's about 840 plots for cotton. I say plots. Those are samples. We actually lay out two plots per sample, so you can really kind of double those numbers.
Right.
But again, we're focused on the key growing areas, usually about 80% of the production in those states where we do objective yield. So it's some great information we can add to the mix along with the satellite data and that critical information we get reported to us directly by the farmers.
Okay, Lance, only about a minute left, but what kind of information are you gathering in those objective yield plots?
Well, it just depends on the maturity of the field that you step into. And so it's everything from plant population to, you know, whether it's ears, pods, bowls, whatever, we're counting those. But really, as the crop matures, the best information comes when it's mature enough we can harvest portions of those plots, send that off to the lab in St. Louis and do some yield analysis there. So it's just going to depend on where you're at. This season, obviously, development's moving along pretty well, so we should get some great information.
Okay. Also, you're probably doing the quarterly grain stock survey right now, aren't you?
Yep, we got that underway as well. Farmers should be getting some calls, as well as those commercial facilities. And obviously, there's a couple of areas that we're very concerned about with the commercials. But that's why we're out there collecting the information so we can find out what the real situation is.
Excellent. Excellent. Lance, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. Really appreciate you.
Anytime, Chip. Happy to be here.
All right. That is Lance Honig. He is the chief of the crops branch at USDA's National Ag Statistics Service. Okay. We've got some questions about some recent court decisions surrounding SREs. We'll get to the bottom line with Jeff Cooper from RFA next.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, we had an export sales announcement for hard red winter wheat this morning, and this wheat market's under some pressure to start the week. What's going on?
Yeah, just not caring about that this morning, Chip. Yeah. I think the focus is later this week as we look ahead to the crop production supply and demand reports. And you've got corn under pressure, and as a result, wheat is following to the downside there. I think it's pretty clear at the time that, funds are liquidating long positions across the grain and soy complex, and that's putting pressure on the market as we look ahead to those reports on Friday.
Okay, yeah, I get the long liquidation in here, but it also feels like there may be some, I don't know, is there some pre-harvest hedging going on in corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I think that's some of it. And also, take a look at the broader picture and just take a step back here. And the commodity sector in general is just under heavy pressure today. So, rough start across the sector and even when you look at the U.S. stock indexes, they're lower this morning, so kind of a risk-off day here as we come out of the holiday weekend.
Yeah, red numbers in the livestock trade too.
Yeah, definitely. Started with a little bit of a firmer tone. Actually, the live cattle market tried to bounce and after some of the pressure they faced, but that gave way quickly to some selling. The good news is it's relatively light selling pressure at the moment, but they are under pressure. Feeder cattle, despite the heavy weakness in the corn market, they're under pressure today. So that's some of that broad-based selling across the commodity sector coming into play. And then the hog market, it's also weaker this morning.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Got Davis Michelson with us as well.
Hello.
Hello. Good conversation. Lance explained the process of what is going into that acreage estimate for Friday's crop production report, how they're going to be using the objective yield data. Objective yield data from those plots out there will have a role, but as he said, the best data from those plots come when the crop is mature and they can harvest the crop, send it to St. Louis, to the lab there, and do actual yield analysis on those plots. So it'll have an influence in there, but it's going to be a lot it's going to rely very heavily once again on the farmer survey for Friday's crop production report. Okay. I've been anxious to have this conversation with Jeff Cooper, the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Let's bring him in right now. Jeff, how are you this morning?
Doing great, Chip. How are you?
We're okay. We're okay. Getting a start after a long holiday weekend and feeling pretty good about it. So it's time for me to gain an understanding of exactly what is going on with EPA's efforts to reconsider those 31 SREs or small refinery exemptions that were issued. It was for compliance year 2018, right?
That's right, Chip. And so I'm going to back up here a little bit and talk about how we got to where we are today, because it is pretty convoluted and complicated. But yeah, it was almost two, or actually a little more than 2 years ago. It was August of 2019 when the Trump administration came out and granted 31 small refinery exemptions in one fell swoop. And I'm sure you recall that was sort of like dropping a bomb on the renewable fuel standard. They did it with just a one-page memo that provided no analysis, no record, no information at all on why EPA was granting those exemptions. And so at that time, RFA and five other groups immediately challenged those exemptions in the D.C. Circuit Court. We argued that EPA's actions were arbitrary and capricious and that EPA had exceeded its authority. So also at the same time, we had the Tenth Circuit Court case going on, and that one, of course, ended up in the Supreme Court. And so while all of that was playing out, this D.C. Circuit case on these 31 exemptions was put on hold during all of those proceedings. So now that we have the Supreme Court decision behind us, the hold on this case is being lifted, and it is picking back up. And so EPA is saying, hey, rather than going through more litigation on these 31 exemptions, they're just asking the court to voluntarily remand all 31 of those exemptions, send them back to the agency for reevaluation. Okay. And so that sounds like great news, and it is good news. Yeah. But our concern is while EPA is reconsidering those 31 exemptions, they need to also vacate them. They need to invalidate those exemptions. As it stands currently, EPA is saying, no, we're going to leave those 31 exemptions in place while we reassess whether they should have been granted or not. And our concern is, you know, these things could go into a black hole at EPA, and it could be years before they're done reassessing these exemptions.
Okay, so for ethanol production, for the RFS, for the legitimacy of the RFS, it is September of 2021. We're talking about 2018 blending obligations and so on. Explain why it really matter, why it should really matter to all of us.
Sure. And it's, again, it's a complicated thing to talk about, but I think once you figure it out, it all makes sense. When EPA exempted these 31 small refineries, that let them out of their obligation to blend about 1.3 billion gallons of renewable fuels under the RFS for 2018. So 1.3 billion gallons of ethanol and biodiesel and other renewable fuels. And so what EPA did is they said, if you complied with your 2018 standards, you really didn't need to. So we're going to return 1.3 billion RIN credits, and each one of those counts as a gallon of renewable fuel blending. We're going to return all those credits to you 31 refineries, and you can use those credits to comply with future RFS requirements. Okay. So what that essentially did is it reduced the 2018 standard by 1.3 billion, returned that volume of credit compliance credits back to the marketplace, and allowed them to use those credits in lieu of blending physical gallons, you know, this year and in the last few years.
Gotcha. And the other thing that I would assume that you're looking to do is to gain some clarity on why those SREs were issued and to set a precedent that if it was wrong that they were issued to begin with, we can't forget that in the future when SREs are considered again.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. What we're saying is, hey, it's great that EPA is asking the court voluntarily to pull these 31 exemptions back and reanalyze them. But what EPA should be doing is saying, hey, rather than leaving these exemptions in place or in force while we're doing this assessment, we're just going to invalidate all 31 of these, and we're going to require those 31 refineries to demonstrate compliance with their 2018 obligations. So those RIN credits, they need to turn those back into EPA. And after this reanalysis, if EPA determines that, you know, a few of those refineries indeed deserved a small refinery exemption, then fine, go back and reissue it. But that's not what EPA is proposing to do here. And like I said, we're worried that this is in effect they're trying to get this case dismissed by asking for these exemptions back, but then not doing anything on them.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Jeff, what's the latest on efforts to get some aid to biofuel producers, that would be used to offset some of the financial damage that was caused by COVID-19 market disruptions?
Well, we're still anxiously awaiting further details from USDA on COVID relief, Chip. Late last week, Secretary Vilsack said, hey, we should hear something here in a few weeks on relief for biofuel producers. You might remember that on June 15th, Secretary Vilsack announced $700 million in aid would be made available to biofuel producers. And at that time, he said, we're going to get this out in the next 60 days. Well, 60 days have come and gone, and we still haven't heard any further details on how or when this aid is going to be distributed to the industry. And I'll tell you what, I mean, the ethanol industry is still feeling the effects of COVID and still recovering from the massive downturn we saw related to the COVID pandemic and still trying to climb back out of that hole. So this aid is still very much needed in the ethanol industry.
Well, last week when Secretary Vilsack was in the Farm Journal Town Hall with Clinton Griffiths, he basically said we're not sure on whether or not USDA has the authority under that piece of legislation that was passed back in December of 2020. Wiesmeyer went back and looked at it, and it's clear in there, isn't it, Jeff, that USDA has authority?
It is clear, and that comment really confused me and many others, Chip. I mean, that was the comment before that legislation was passed in December. You know, people said, well, we're not sure if USDA has the authority. So our industry worked with our friends in Congress to make sure that there is statutory language that explicitly gives USDA the authority to provide COVID relief to biofuel producers. And it was in the law that passed at the end of December. So there should be no ambiguity whatsoever. And I think, Secretary Vilsack was saying, hey, in his mind, there never had been ambiguity. That comment struck us as a little surprising as well.
Yeah. Okay. Ethanol production has been sliding. Is it seasonal stuff, Jeff? Just some maintenance? What's been going on?
Well, there's really a couple things going on, Chip, and there are a few places throughout the Corn Belt where old crop is wearing pretty thin and bins are getting really low. And so I think we've seen a number of producers just ratcheting back on the throttle to get through to new crop and kind of waiting for harvest to really kick into high gear, because like I said, there are a few spots where supplies are running pretty thin and basis is incredibly high. So I think that's number one. And number two, this is the time of year when you typically do see plants doing maintenance. And I think because of the corn supply situation, you're seeing plants enter into maintenance a little earlier than usual and kind of extend those shutdowns. Instead of doing a 4 or 5 day turnaround, they're taking a week or 10 days and really trying to just run out the clock until we get some new crop corn in the bins.
Yep. Only about 40 seconds left here, Jeff, but I always like to ask you this question. What else are you working on?
Well, we're working on a whole lot of other things, Chip, but the big thing is we're anxiously awaiting the RVO proposals from EPA. Yep. We know the White House is reviewing those. They should be out really, within the next week or two.
Okay.
And that'll be the first real signal from this administration on where they stand on the RFS.
Boy, that's going to tell us so much. And hopefully some of the rumors that were out there earlier were false and we get full compliance, right?
That's our hope as well. As we are really hopeful that we can shoot down those rumors when these proposals come out. And hopefully they'll show that the Biden administration is putting the RFS back on track.
If they're serious about their climate change goals and efforts, I got to believe that there's full compliance coming. But
it should be a no-brainer.
It should be, but I don't know if we can make that prediction or not. Jeff, it's always good to talk with you. Appreciate you. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Chip. Have a good one.
You bet. That is Jeff Cooper. He is the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I will put a wrap on this week's, I was going to say this week's first hour, but that ain't right. Today's AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Crazy.
Okay.
But that's how it goes.
AgriTalk, AgriTalk. AgriTalk. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory.
I got a feeling we're gonna hear more of this one in September, aren't we?
I'm going off the rails, is what I'm doing.
On a September train. Yes.
I need to send a shout out to the good folks of Southern Iowa, Appanoose County. Beautiful. Oh. Gorgeous. I was holed up down there with some of my music homies. We played a little gig for the good folks out on the lake. They all rolled up in their boats and they're out there
nice
tubing around the lake and stuff. And we're just set up in the grass on the shore. You know, it was kind of this old, you know, classic Skinnerd moment, you know, from before they were huge, just these sort of weirdos and nobody seems to remember where their shirts are. And they're just all sweaty and playing in the weeds and like their shoes are muddy because they, you know, got a little too close to the lake.
Yeah.
And we'd play a song and then from the boat, you know, they'd honk their horns and stuff. Appanoose County, I love you. It was fantastic. It was so great. So great. And you.
Oh, yeah.
We almost didn't get the show started correctly because you are clearly still on a beef high of some sort. Just with the beef and the beef and the beef. Tell us about it.
Well, I had a little event over the weekend for some friends. Big thank you to the Jones County Cattlemen for making it all happen for us. And it's surprising what happens at a Ducks Unlimited banquet sometimes when you get a little aggressive with the bidding. You end up with something really cool. And that's what we had. But, yeah, we had almost 50 people partake in a steak fry over the weekend. So you're welcome, beef industry.
Wow.
I supported the heck out of you this weekend.
You did your part. You did your part, and you seem better for it. You seem better for it.
You know, I gotta ask. So this lakeshore performance that was going on. Is there any chance that that's gonna some video from that would be available in the Farm On benefit concert on RFP?
Actually, no. Unfortunately, no. But I will tell you this, bro. It was so primitive that, I'm playing keyboards, right?
Yeah.
So I had my little keyboard set up there, and we ran so much extension cord through the woods. I had to stop and check a couple of times. I think it came unplugged. We played until it was too dark for any of us to even see our instruments, and then beyond, and then realized, maybe this is why they usually have lights on stage. So when it gets dark, you can play the right ones. You know, you push down the right one, and it sounds great. You hit the wrong one, then people
are
like,
perfect.
What happened? They were doing so well. I used to love Tom Petty, you know, type of thing.
Got dark. Hey, that Farm On benefit concert is going to be on RFD Monday, September 20th, 7 o'clock Central Time. It's headlined by Eastern Corbin, Alex Miller. We want you. It's a benefit concert. We want FFA to benefit from this. So a couple of ways to do that. Go online, donate at ffa.org/farmon, or you can text FARMON to the number 20222 to donate $10.
Benefit is a verb. It's a verb in this case. Yeah. It's not a modifier. It's a verb.
That's right.
That's benefit. Good to hear from Lance Honig. Yep. Okay. What? Tell me if I'm wrong, but including a look at acreage in the September rather than the October report kind of backs up something that he seems to be pressing a little bit in that he wants NAS to be, he used the word, as responsive as possible. There's been a lot of critique about the, well, then they go back and they, you know, they've made adjustments to the last report's numbers in the coming report and all of this sort of stuff. What is USDA doing? What the heck? They're never going to get it right. He's trying to be responsive in this report, and that's equated to that data showing up a month early.
Right. And all we know is that they are looking at the data. We don't know if it's going to cause any change in the acreage estimates from USDA. We don't know that at this point. Now, the analysis that Pro Farmer guys, Brian Grady and Bill Nelson, the analysis that they did on the certified acreage data would suggest that corn acres would be up, planted acres would be up 1 to 1.25, maybe 1.3 million, something like that. That's why when Brian put together the Pro Farmer crop estimates, he included 1 million acres more planted, 910,000 harvested additional over what USDA had in the last production report.
Okay. And then let's move on to talking to Jeff Cooper because I'm anxiously awaiting the RVO's details. We'll just start there. Should tell us what the administration is thinking on renewable fuels moving forward. That's going to be a big one.
You can only anticipate so much before they need. And the other thing is the Biden administration, EPA Administrator Regan, they can only signal and talk about their efforts to fight climate change for so long. Eventually, you've got to put some action behind it. In this case, action would be support of the renewable fuel standard, would be support for E15 availability year-round, would be support for higher blends of ethanol and more ethanol use. That's the bottom line because it reduces greenhouse gas emissions. We can participate in carbon reduction right now with more ethanol use. That's the bottom line. And if they don't come out and support it with the full implementation of the RFS, in other words, 15 billion gallons is 15 billion gallons, let's get it used, then you got to question their commitment to this messaging that we've been getting for just more than 2 years now from President Biden.
Yep. And quickly, I hear ESPN is front-running the Farm Journal Annual College Roadshow Tour by visiting your own Iowa State.
That's right. We will be in Ames later this week on the College Roadshow and ahead of ESPN.
There you go.
And College Game Day ahead of the Iowa-Iowa State football game. Looking forward to that. Thanks for listening this morning. Wow, we've got a big show this afternoon. Rick Brock and Associates. Come back, 206 Central.